Well, if you happen to be on Gmail or YouTube, you probably saw Google's announcement of its new privacy settings. The company collects and then compiles data about you based on your activity on its search page, Gmail, YouTube, and phones running in its Android operating system. Soon, it will be selling that information to advertisers, targeting you specifically based on your Google patterns. Now, this is giving privacy advocates cause for alarm. 8 members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans, wrote a letter to Google's CEO asking Google to explain what kind of data it currently collects and explain how that info will be used under the new system. Among the things we're going to talk about tonight with Catherine Albrecht will be this. Catherine, also survivor fighting cancer. She'll explain that later on tonight and some of the things that she has done to win this battle. She's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Catherine Albrecht, our special guest tonight, consumer privacy expert. A number of her websites are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now. And during the course of this evening, you might want to go to our website and take a look at some of the things that she is doing. I'm welcoming back Catherine Albrecht. Catherine, how are you?
George, it is wonderful to be on tonight.
I got to tell you how delighted I was when executive producer Lisa called me and said that you were ready, you were strong enough to do a full show again.
She said, Catherine's back. I know. It was wonderful talking to Lisa and Tom and getting back in touch with you guys. And I know, you know, I've gotten a bunch of email from Coast listeners saying, where are you? Are you okay? Because, as you know, I spent the last year battling breast cancer, and it's been quite a ride, but I am feeling terrific.
Good for you.
I'm delighted to be back. And, you know, no time like the present, because isn't this whole privacy issue that I've been working on for, 12 years now? I mean, it is exploding.
It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And we're going to talk next hour about what you've been doing to fight this battle with cancer, because you might be able to help some of our listeners, Catherine.
Well, and I've spent a year, you know, people who know, I've been on your show since, 2003. And so people who've been listening to me on the show for years know that I'm a researcher. It's what I do. And so you throw a problem in my lap like cancer or privacy, whatever it is, and I'm going to get to the bottom of it.
Well, when we went to lunch, you know, a few years ago, even though you said you've been battling this for a year, did you have any inkling at all at that time that there was something wrong?
None. Absolutely none. And, you know, you were looking healthy, and Tom, your producer, looked fantastic. I was looking good. We were all, like, in the California sunshine, having a wonderful lunch and hanging out, and no clue that this dark cloud was looming over my shoulder. But, you know, they tell you that by the time you discover a cancerous tumor the size of mine, which was, I don't know, 6 centimeters, so it's the size of a little mouse. I mean, this thing was huge.
Yeah.
By the time you find it, it's been in there a couple of years.
I was
going
to say.
Even at that lunch.
Yeah,
we didn't know it.
It had to have been there. That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Ugh.
All right. Well, we'll devote some time next hour to that. Let's get into this Google thing, first of all. Can you explain just what it is and how this works? So somebody goes to a website like Google, goes to a search engine like Google. Others, you work with StartPage. They don't do that, and you can explain that for me later on. But so you go to Google, and you type up, I want to know about ancient aliens or something. What happens?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me clarify, it's not just Google. It's Google, it's Bing, it's Yahoo, it's all the major search engines are collecting data on everything you search for. And I've been on the show before telling people this, and, you know, kind of fallen on deaf ears, I have to say, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then Google comes out with this announcement last week that starting March 1st, they've got a new policy. Now, as everybody knows, Google is leading this industry. So when Google does it, you know everybody else is going to do it,
yeah,
too. So what Google said is, you know, we have over 60 different privacy policies for all our different products, whether it is the Google search engine, whether it is a Gmail email account, whether it is YouTube videos, whatever it is. We've got all these different products, all these different privacy policies. We're going to simplify all of those by making one single privacy policy, and we're going to make your life easier. Now, that sounds really good until you actually get into some of the details, and they made people a little bit nervous because they said, now what we're going to do is the data that we collect through your Gmail, because as I and, over 30 other privacy organizations and experts back in 2004, George, we wrote a letter to Google when Gmail first came out. Hard to believe it's been around that long. But we actually wrote them a letter and petitioned them formally not to release Gmail with its privacy policy back in 2004 that's in effect to this day. That privacy policy said anything you write in the email, they can go through and grab the keyword. So, you know, I write you a note and I say, hey, I'm heading off for a Caribbean vacation. I look forward to seeing you soon. And next time I log on, all of a sudden I'm seeing ads for Caribbean vacations. How'd they get it?
Okay.
So this is the privacy policy. Like I said, back in 2004, we were saying, you know, not making me comfortable here. I want to be able to feel like it's like the postal mail.
Me and my buddies, we're going out to a tavern tonight. We love Budweiser. All of a sudden, it starts showing up, right?
And then you get the AA meeting, you know, the announcement.
So that's amazing technology, though, isn't it?
It is. It is. And, you know, the thing about Google is Google is powerful. They offer powerful services. And I think it's the reason why, you know, people love the company. They've got the colorful, multicolored logo, and they offer cool services. And people, you know, they also come as the setting on everybody's computer. You get a brand new Dell computer, and you open up Windows or Internet Explorer.
It's right there.
Google, right?
And nobody really reads these privacy issues. Nobody.
They are, though, George, because, see, when Google sent out these announcements, and anybody who's got, if Google had your email address because of anything you've signed up for, within the last couple of days, you received, and I know millions of your listeners are nodding, you received an announcement from Google saying we're updating, changing our privacy policies. And in that actual email, and I've got a copy of it right here, they said, now, see if you like
it. And by the way, I didn't read it because I knew I was going to have you on to explain it to me.
There you go. Good. So, well, not good that you didn't read it, but good that I can be here to set the record straight. So here's what Google writes itself in this email. They said, one policy, one Google experience. And I got to tell you, it kind of reminded me of One Ring to Rule Them All, you know, from The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So I read on. And it says, you know, if you're signed into Google, now this is the key. If you sign in, so you sign into your Gmail account, or if you have a YouTube account, you sign into your YouTube account. If you don't sign back out again, and then you go into another tab or another window or another service of Google's, they're going to link those services together.
Okay.
Now, they're saying this is going to be really cool and it's going to make your life easier. A lot of people say, yeah, I love it. Other people say, ooh, not too comfortable. So here's their example from this email. If you're signed into Google, we can do things like suggest search queries or tailor your search results based on the interests you've expressed in Google+, Gmail, and YouTube. Now, let me say what that actually means. Let me translate that. So let's say you're in Gmail, and as I just discussed, I write to you and I say, hey, George, have a great time in Vegas this weekend. Then what Google is saying that they can do is when you read that email and Vegas is in there, and then you now go over and you log on to YouTube, or you just open YouTube. You don't even have to log in. You're logged into Gmail. You open YouTube. All of a sudden now, there's all this stuff about Vegas. You're like, how did they know? Or you go to, you know, one of their other...
That's already happening.
Right.
Because I've noticed some very strange things over the past month that I might be searching for something, a story, whatever. And like an hour later, I go back on and there's stuff about that, but they're like ads.
Yes. And see, now you, when you first introduced this segment, I'm just going to make a minor correction here, that you said Google would sell this information to advertisers. And it's a little more subtle than that. Google actually doesn't sell or share the data that they collect on you. They have a massive database on every single person who has ever used their services, no question. But they make a point of stating, and they're very clear about this, and I believe they're doing it, you know, that they're following their own rules, that they don't sell that. What they do instead is they sell access. So somebody says, I'm selling, you know, Vegas vacation rentals, and I want to access Google's extensive knowledge of who's been writing Gmails about Vegas and doing searches about Vegas. And on the basis of that, if they were writing emails about it, I want you to start popping up ads on YouTube or other places. And then that's how Google makes its money. And I've said this before, you know, people love Google. It's no, you know, no question. They like it. And I say, when was the last time that a multi-billion dollar, huge mega corporation like Google gave you all of its products for free?
Yeah.
And the answer is, they don't.
That doesn't happen.
You are the product. They're giving you the stuff free. It's kind of like bait. They're getting you in there,
and then they package
you up and sell you to their advertisers.
I want to hear the ups and downs. In terms of pure marketing, it's brilliant.
It is. It's genius.
There's no question about that.
Yeah.
I mean, because first of all, with a search on an internet site, with ads that pop up, you don't know if someone's interested in that or not. You really have to, as an advertiser, you really want to get the biggest bang for your dollar, focus in on somebody who at least has a higher probability that they're going to be interested in what you do.
That could be done anonymously, though, and there's the key. And you talked about StartPage. That's how StartPage works. So if you log on to a private search engine like StartPage and you punch in used cars, I don't know, whatever, you punch something in, you're going to get a generic set of ads about used cars. They're not going to be tailored to you and your previous Gmails and searches. You might have written, wow, I'm really looking for a Buick. And if you go to StartPage, StartPage doesn't know that, but if you go to Google will know based on your Gmail that, hey, you're really into Buicks.
And they'll send you stuff like that.
Yeah, and some people like that. You know, some people want that kind of customization. Other people say, that's really creepy, and I don't want it. So it's got to be an individual choice. And I think the important thing here, George, people have to understand what's going on behind the scenes. And I think that's the most important part. If you understand it, a lot of young people I talk to in their 20s say, I don't care, watch me, go ahead. And, you know, I try to educate and set them straight and explain there's some real downsides and we can get into those.
Well, but bothers me is the fact that they know what you're doing. That bothers me.
Well, and now let me get into their post, because they on their blog, Google was talking about how cool this new service is going to be. And let me give you an example and see if this, you know, where does this hit on your creepiness factor? Google said they could, quote, now this is their quote, provide reminders that you're going to be late for a meeting based on your location, your calendar, and an understanding of what traffic is like that day.
Amazing.
So do you really? Yeah,
I don't need that. I don't need that. I know what time I need to be there, and I'll be there.
Well, they're looking in your calendar. They're looking at your location. Now, this would be people probably with an Android phone that has a location capability. They're looking at your calendar. They're calculating where you are. You're not even asking them to do this in the scenario that they propose. They figure out where you are. They look at your calendar, figure out where you're going to go, calculate the route that you're going to travel, and then they use other systems to figure out what the traffic looks like, and then bing, you get a little announcement.
Are they monitoring your text messages to people? I mean, hey, sweetheart, I'm coming home tonight with a bottle of wine. Will you then get inundated with wine companies?
Or those AA ones again, right?
Yeah.
Well,
I seem to be talking about booze a lot tonight, and it's just...
Hey, it's 2 in the morning here,
it's
so
easy.
Go right ahead. But,
I mean, do they go that far? Do they get into your personal messages?
Well, what they're essentially saying, and this really comes up when you're starting to talk about services like Google Voice, because I don't use Google Voice, and a lot of these services I don't use because, like I said, since 2004, I've kind of been shaking my fist going, don't do it, guys. Come on, don't be evil, because that was their original motto, we're not evil, don't be evil. But, you know, when you look at Google Voice, and I've got some friends who are in the freedom community who are privacy people using Google Voice. And every time I call them, you know, somebody gives me a phone number. Hey, give me a call. Here's my number. Let's set up a meeting, whatever. I call them up and it says, the Google Voice subscriber you have reached is not available. And I'm like, ah, curses, drats. You're foiled again. Because what happens is Google Voice, thereby Google, just recorded my phone number as being in a relationship with that person. And their privacy policy clearly states that they can collect all of the information. If you have a Google Voice, who calls, who you receive a call from, who you make a call to, all of that, your contacts, all gets interconnected.
Oh, my.
So you put all that together, and the same is also true of Gmail accounts. They can keep track of who your contacts are, who you're writing to, what you're writing to people, what the keywords are. And we've known this for a long time, that in some Google server somewhere, and not just Google, you know, Bing, Yahoo, all these big services, all the things you've ever done through their services are there in a file with your name at the top. And I just wish...
Well, how do they know it's you? First of all, explain that.
Especially know it's you with the new Google policy if you have an account with them that you log into. That's
like Gmail.
Gmail's probably the biggest one. you know, if we talk about all your listeners, probably the number one account that they would be logging into would be a Gmail account. It's also Picasa. It's YouTube. You know, people have YouTube accounts so that they can post videos under their account. And you know, search engines, you're not really logging into the search engine, but if you're logged into Gmail or Picasa or YouTube or the calendar or any of their other services, and then you go into the search engine, your searches are getting linked back to your account and your identity because you're still logged in.
Let's take this in a different direction for a moment. What if not advertisers use this, but governments decide to use this?
Yeah.
And they want certain key phrases and words picked up in order to then start isolating people. And these words could be unrest, guns, unhappy with government. Whatever it is, Big Brother decides, I'm going to find out who is saying what. Would it work for that?
You know, it would. And we know a couple of things in the internet space. Twitter, there was just a story I was reading today about two guys from England who got arrested by Homeland Security trying to fly into the U.S.
Yeah, I just had that story tonight.
Yeah, because they were just joshing around on Twitter and saying they were going to, you know,
destroy America. what they say they meant was they were going to go out and you know, get drunk.
Party hard.
Party hard.
Yeah, there's lots of ways you can say that. I'm going to get trashed. I'm going to, you know, whatever. And they got themselves arrested. And that's right on the heels of Twitter announcing that they now have the capability of censoring tweets in countries that request that. And Thailand was the first country to come out and applaud them for it within like a day or two of the announcement. Because in Thailand, it's a crime. It's actually a punishable offense to criticize the royal family, to criticize the government, right? So if you go, if you're in Thailand and you go on Twitter and you say, you know, the queen is, you know,
whatever,
you know, she's not looking so good these days, you could actually be arrested for that offense. And so anytime that there's government involvement and there's a huge database that's collecting information about anything, you run the risk of that government turning around and saying, hand over your data. And Google says very clearly in their privacy policy, and, you know, they say we don't share information except in those rare cases where we get asked for it. And they get asked for it a couple thousand times a year. They have to turn over people's information from their accounts they've collected to government.
Yeah, that to me is the scary part of all of this, this infringement on your rights. You know, I'm not so sure I'd like the fact that they know what you like and then they inundate you with ads and stuff like that. But the privacy issues that government could then take advantage of, that bothers me.
I'll tell you where this really scared me, and this is when I actually said, I've got to get off of Google, and I've got to find an alternative. And this is how I found Startpage, which hopefully we can talk about the private alternative here. Yeah. But the thing that really pushed me over the edge was that Homeland Security memo that came out and said, let's identify who the domestic terrorists are. And it had a list.
Alex Jones was on that list.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know what? Here's the scary part for me, George. I wasn't named by name on that list, but they said anybody who's concerned about RFID and anybody who was involved with the film America from Freedom to Fascism, which I was in. I'm one of the key people in the film, America from Freedom to Fascism. That was Aaron Russo.
Aaron Russo, the late Aaron Russo.
The late Aaron Russo, the late great Aaron Russo. May he rest in peace, and what an amazing man. He came out with that film, and I attribute, by the way, the rise of the Ron Paul movement to that movie. Because in 2008, I'll digress a little bit, I actually went around to the polls here in New Hampshire and Massachusetts for my radio show, and I interviewed people at the polls, and I said, how'd you get, you know, why are you Ron Paul supporters? What are you all about? Because I'm a Ron Paul supporter. And they all said, I saw this amazing movie. It was called America, Freedom. And I'd say, yep, Freedom to Fascism. And then they go, oh, my gosh, you're the woman in it.
Yep. Hold on, Catherine. We're going to come right back, talk more with you about this on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we're going to share some incredible alternative medicine treatments and remedies with Dr. Catherine Albrecht when we come back. And when we do come back, we're going to finish up talking about this situation with Google right here on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Catherine Albrecht. Catherine, I've noticed lately, too, I'm getting unsolicited text messages from companies on my phone. Now, is this just a random thing, or are they pinpointing people?
You know, that's one I haven't actually done a lot of research on, and I will look into that. I'll get back to you on a future
program. Okay. Now, companies like StartPage, you're associated with them. How many other companies are doing this, and what do they do that's different from Google?
Well, the key thing that you have to understand is anytime you go to a website, wherever that website is going to pick up information about you. There's two ways they do it. Well, there's a couple ways to do it, but the two key ways to do it is through your IP address, which is kind of like a, you know, it's
a calling
like
card.
Caller ID, right? When you make a phone call, your number shows up. So they've got an IP address on you. And then the other thing that websites do is they put tracking cookies on your browser. And that's how, if you go to a website, a search engine, any search engine that's going to use these tracking cookies, you look up, I don't know, used cars, as we were discussing, or Buick cars or whatever, and then they put a tracking cookie on your browser, and then later on you go to another website, and the website reads the tracking cookie, says, oh yeah, I need to serve an ad about Buicks and cars, and then boom,
gosh,
there's the ad.
I thought I owned a psychic computer. Darn!
Like it, doesn't it? I know, and not always in a good way. So that's how they work, either IP address or cookies. And virtually every website on the internet nowadays, every commercial website, is using both of those as a way to manage and kind of massage the traffic and manipulate the data and collect as much as they can, because let's face it, it's out there. We're leaving it hanging out there. It's under behind the scenes where we don't see it, but it's right there for the computers to grab. So StartPage, and I actually first announced StartPage on your show, George, StartPage.com, which is the private alternative to Google. What StartPage does is they don't record the IP address and they don't record the cookie.
And they're a layer in between, aren't they?
So they're a layer. So if you want to do a search for name your topic on Google, you can go to startpage.com. You can type in the query, and then what StartPage does is they go to Google for you behind the scenes, submit your query for you, get the results for you, and then clean away all the stuff that might track you.
Before it gets to
you. And serve it to you nice and clean, and then they themselves don't track you, don't record your IP address, and don't use tracking cookies. So that's kind of the cool piece. And then the other piece that StartPage just announced recently is they're using something called SSL encryption. And if people haven't heard of it, you probably should start paying attention. If you see HTTPS, like S like Sam or mm-hmm. secure, you'll see it when you go to your bank or when you go to log out of, when you go to check out on an online merchant website. You'll see when you're about to enter your credit card data, you should see, that there's HTTPS up there. And what that means is that that page and all the data that you are submitting to that website can't be intercepted in transit. So it can't, if you're in a coffee shop or you're on Wi-Fi, you're in a, I don't know, a train station or something, it's possible that people can sniff the data out of the air if it's not encrypted.
Ah, okay.
Your ISP on top of that, some of the ISPs have even announced that they do this as a matter of policy. The ISP, like your Verizon, Comcast, Quest, whoever's providing your internet service, they also can track and monitor all your traffic going back and forth. And in fact, in England, they've got mandatory logging of that stuff for the ISPs. It's actually a law. Creepy. So what StartPage does with the HTTPS encryption, which is automatic now, everybody gets it. When you get there, it's already turned on, is it means that everything you communicate privately to StartPage can't be intercepted in transit. So there's a couple of neat things that StartPage is doing. And what I like about it, and the reason I even found StartPage is because I was going nuts. I was like, I either have to get off the internet or just accept the fact that they're watching me all the time. I hear this all the time from people. What can you do? There's nothing we can do. It's over. The battle's lost. And I say, no, don't give up. There are easy ways. And, you know, initially people say, well, I don't want to use a different search engine. I want the Google results. And so StartPage actually gives you the Google results. So startpage.com, the world's most private search engine, you can go there, get these search results, and if you don't want the Google results, then there are other alternatives. I initially announced ixquick.com, which is the parent company of StartPage. It's ixquick.com, and what they do is they go out and they give you the search results from everybody but Google. Same deal, same no tracking, same privacy, same everything. But, you know, most people want those Google results. And the reality, if you're looking up something and it's not private and you don't care, you know, you may as well go ahead and use Google, but
Sure.
you got to realize that come March 1st, all of your searches are going to be coordinated and consolidated
And
with
look
those
out.
60 other privacy policies.
I had a friend call me. He's got a buddy coming into town in a few weeks. He's a magician who can find people, no matter who you are, whether it's Brad Pitt or you, he can find you on the internet, I guess, and then he goes and he sees you. I mean, and he wants to do some kind of show on that. But so my friend said, boy, he'd be a great guest on Coast to Coast. Google him.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
I got to tell you, I have heard that phrase hundreds of times now.
Probably thousands.
People don't say, go to, you know, just do a search for so-and-so. Google him. Why do they do that?
I know. You know, it was a brilliant moment when that happened for Google, because you've got a company that at that time was competing with lots of other companies. There was Alta Vista, people may remember from back when.
There was Yahoo, right? There was AOL.
Yeah. You know, there were all these other search engines. Bing wasn't around yet, but there were all these other search engines. And when people hear on the notion that the name, it sounds kind of like doodle or noodle. It's kind of a fun word. It's got the oogle, google,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing going on. And it was fun to say. And I think when people picked up on that, it became kind of a cool, kind of a meme.
It's a little slang.
Yeah, it's a little slang. But see, what's happened now is you've got this phrase, Google it, instead of, you know, Bing it or Yahoo it or Start Page it, which is what I'd like to hear people say. Start Page it.
Start Page it.
Yeah. you've got millions.
Google does have that ring to it.
You know? You've got almost, you know, it's literally millions of dollars of free advertising a day that's going to a commercial company. A commercial company. This is not, you know, it's not the federal government, not that we love them, but, you know, we all have one and you can't boycott them and it's the same one for all of us. You know, Google is a choice. And I'd like people to begin to see it that way instead of seeing it as something that we must use, that everybody uses, to see it as a choice. You know, it's a choice some people choose to make, but you don't have to. And if we can get that out of our vocabulary, here's the crazy thing. When I made that decision to say, I just can't keep using Google, it took me 6 months, George, 6 months to stop saying Google this. I would slap myself every time.
It's in your system.
It's in your,
and how does the search system work so quickly? I mean, you type in whatever, it's done instantly.
Enormous.
How does it search the entire internet in nanoseconds?
Enormous quantities of firepower, computer firepower. You know, I do a daily radio vignette that goes out on like 70 radio stations around the country. It's like a little 90-second little snippet of information. And I recently did one on the power consumption of Google. And I don't have it right in front of me to remember the exact numbers, but whatever, it was blowing my mind. It was like a small city to power Google servers to be able to do that. Now, they don't do the search instantly, George. What they do is they spider around, and anybody who does search engine optimization knows what I'm talking about. They spider around and they look for connections and interconnections. So they've already got it spidered and collected and ready in their system. And, you know, behind the scenes, they're constantly kind of weaving their little tentacles around the internet to get all of this information and store it in a central place. And then you look something up and boom, it's instant because they've got it already sitting right there at the ready. And they add to it. They update it all the time, as you know. I mean, you can do 24-hour searches. By the way, StartPage just added that, which I thought was a really cool feature, is you can actually narrow down your search to just the last 24 hours and get, like, the really new stuff.
But this goes all around the planet instantly, doesn't it?
It does. Well, it's not instant, George, because what you're instantly accessing...
Well, it seems instant to the guy at home.
Google. You're instantly accessing the brain. And the brain has already gathered the information. It's gathering it all the time. And when you query it, you're just querying the central brain. You're not actually going out to China and Korea and, you know, India and everywhere else.
Well, and what determines the placement of the information that you get? You know, you got to start with something. So you look at your page, and let's just say I want information on the Detroit Tigers, the baseball team, right? The very first thing that comes up, how did it get there? And who determined?
Fascinating. And you just hit on one of the most interesting and I think creepy things that's going on today. When you search for, say, if you search for tigers, get on the phone and talk to, you know, your brother-in-law and say, let's both get onto Google and look up tigers. And you tell me what the first 10 hits are, and I'll tell you what my first 10
Aren't they the same?
No. And see, this is what's wild. If it's something you've searched for before, see, and again, Google is trying to be super helpful, but in a way that a lot of people aren't liking.
So if you, let's say in a given week, you look for the Detroit Tigers 10 times on Google.
Let me give you a better example. Let's say pink. You look for pink.
Pink.
And that's their example. They say pink and jaguar were their two examples. Do you want jaguar the cat or jaguar the car? Do you want pink the color or pink the singer? And depending on your previous searches, Google puts you in what I call a data ghetto. Your ghetto, if you've searched for jaguars and you meant cars in the past, you are going to see nothing but Jaguar results for cars. And the cool thing about StartPage is StartPage removes the data ghetto. It gives you the Google results without the personalization. Now, you can call that personalization and optimization. A lot of people see it that way. Or you could call it censorship, because a lot of people see it that way.
They're editorializing what they want you to see.
That's right. But they say to you, we're helping you to weed out irrelevant results. We're giving you optimized results that are relevant to you personally. And that's why we want to read your Gmail, and that's why we want to watch what you're doing on your Android phone, so we can be relevant and timely and give you what you need when you need
What's the criteria for that? One search, three searches of any specific topic where then they start placing it for you?
Well, that we don't know. That we actually don't know,
right.
And that's all proprietary algorithms that they come up with. But the reality is people are getting different search results, and when that starts to bug you, go to StartPage, and you can search Google, and you will get the exact same results as everybody else searching Google for that topic, because it breaks you out of that data bubble and gives you the pure results without being personalized to you and your interests.
Truly amazing, though. The technology is unbelievable. So what happens when the grid goes down, we get cooked by an X flare.
Gulp.
It's all gone.
Gulp. Aren't we dependent on this thing? It's getting scary.
Yeah, that's the problem. Something else is going to happen one day.
You know, our whole communication infrastructure, our whole financial infrastructure for the whole nation is now based on this internet.
Tell a young person today who owns a smartphone to go one day without the smartphone. One day where they can't post on Facebook or Twitter or text their friends or go on the web. One day, just tell them, put the phone away for one day. I bet they go crazy.
I know. And, you know, I was in a Starbucks in Massachusetts with my husband recently, and there must have been 40 people. It was jam-packed, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, jam-packed with people. And I looked around, and out of those 40 people, they were mostly sitting like ones, twos, and threes at a table. There were only two tables in that entire Starbucks where every single person was not staring at a screen. And one woman was reading a book, and the other two people were having a conversation with each other. And I went, wow. And this is people sitting together, like you'd see a couple, a man and a woman, and they're just staring at their laptop.
I know. I saw a couple, a table of four at a restaurant, at a nice restaurant. Each one had their little smartphones with them. And not one of the four, not one, was looking at the other person. They were all texting away.
Isn't that wild?
It was bizarre.
You know, and this kind of ties into sort of the big picture that I see. And I've said this since, 2003 on your show. We are moving so quickly to a place where what I call God's green earth, you know, the green grass, the sky, animals, things that God made and put here for us, the sea, the sky, the sun, the air, the wind, all of that is becoming meaningless to people who spend all their time indoors. They don't get the vitamin D exposure, which leads to all these chronic, you know, problems that people have. They're not getting the sun. They're not getting the air. There are teenage kids who never go outside and play. They go to school. They come home on the bus. They sit and they play computer games all night, and they do their homework indoors. And as we get further and further into these fake worlds, you know, one of the things
virtual worlds.
Yeah. I rail against, on my radio program, I've done whole shows on World of Warcraft.
How do they find you, by the way?
How do they find my radio show?
Yeah.
Yeah. CatherineAlbrecht.com, but nobody can spell that.
So. Nobody can.
No. I know Catherine
It took me 3 years to learn how to pronounce it.
Is there like a C in there, so like a Y in there. It's terrible, but it's K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E. But you don't have to remember that because we have a new way to get to it. It's K-M-A. Those are my initials, kmashow.com. Can I tell you a funny story about Aaron Russo?
God rest his soul again, yeah.
So Aaron Russo calls me up and he says, you don't know me, but I'm a Hollywood producer. And you know, he was so gruff.
Oh, he did some great movies, by the way.
He did The Rose with Bette Midler and Trading Places with Eddie Murphy. He was like totally in that scene. So this guy calls me up. He says, I got your number from, you know, a mutual friend. And I hear you know all about RFID. Do you want to be in my movie? And I say, well, you know, I don't know. Tell me more. So anyway, he says, well, I'll email you what you need. And he says, what's your email address? And I said, you know, it's KMA, and I'm not going to give it out or I'm going to get inundated. But I said, you know, KMA, blah, 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 because those are my initials. And he said, KMA? And I said, yeah. He said, don't you know what that means? You know, George.
And don't repeat it.
I won't. But I about fell over. It was, you know, kiss my, you know.
Yeah, really.
And Aaron Russo, coming from him, it was so hilarious, and it was so, like, Aaron was such a gruff guy. He had a heart of gold, but he was the most, he could really knock him back with the best of them. And I got to tell you, ever since then, kmashow.com, I picture myself out there when I'm doing my protests, and I've got the signs outside of Walmart protesting the RFID people. I always think of Aaron Russo.
He did well for himself in the business for a while, did he? And then he died.
I loved him. He was a wonderful guy. And by the way, if your listeners have not seen America from Freedom to Fascism, I'm sure at this point it's all over the internet. Watch the movie. And if you haven't had your primaries yet and Ron Paul is going to be on your ballot, check out the movie because you will see why Ron Paul's message is so critical, and it's all in that film. Unbelievable. Aaron was so far ahead of his time.
I would hope somebody would pick him up as a VP running mate if he doesn't get the nomination.
Well, they don't want him, though.
No.
Because he is threatening the power structure, the people who are paying the money. I mean, who is funding Newt? What did he just get, $10 million from, like, you know, big-time money interests at Vegas? I mean, they're not going to go for Ron Paul. They don't want him in there because he's going to take away their gravy train.
Yeah, but he's going to whittle away. He's not going to give up.
You know, I believe that if the Republican Party really wanted to win, that they would run Ron Paul against Barack Obama, and Ron Paul would win. And I know this because I've talked to liberal Barack Obama supporters, previous Barack Obama supporters, liberals who say, I would vote for Ron Paul over any of the Republicans and over Barack Obama because he's the only candidate that's going to actually end the wars. And see, that's why they elected Obama, because they wanted an end to the wars, and Obama has done the opposite. He got his Nobel Peace Prize and then got us involved in even more wars. And so those people are disillusioned. They look at, you know, Newt and Romney and all those guys. They say, those guys aren't going to
Well, they
war.
Did a reverse. He finally got us out of Iraq.
Well.
Finally.
Yeah, and then got us into Libya. we could go on and on about that. But there are people who are total Democrats, and they have told me, you know, I don't support a lot of the stuff Ron Paul believes in because I'm not a Republican, but if it were down to the wire between those two guys, I would vote for Ron Paul in a heartbeat.
I like Ron Paul. I've told people on this program, he's been on the show twice with me already. I mean, he's a good guy. He's honest. He's an American. He's a constitutionalist.
And, you know, my husband turned me on to Ron Paul back in 1999 when he was a congressman out of Texas.
Let's just hope he gets enough delegates to go to the convention so at least his platform might get heard.
Shake it up.
That's what he's got to be able to do. I don't think he's going to get the nomination, but, you know, if he can go there with 500 delegates.
Wouldn't it be awesome? And, you know, this whole Newt thing, I actually posted on my blog. So people go to my website, kmashow.com, and then click on the blog. You'd probably have to go back a couple of pages.
And by the way, I still think it's going to be tough for any candidate to beat President Obama right now. That's my prophecy of the future.
But, you know, George, the economy, you know, it's all about, what do they say? It's the economy.
That's what got George Bush Sr. But you know what? November's a long way away, and people change their minds, as you well know, very, very fast. If things even have the appearance of being better, it's going to be a tough one. Catherine, we're going to come back in a moment. We're going to talk about how you use natural remedies to supplement your conventional cancer treatment. You combine both of them, and we're going to talk about that on Coast to Coast AM. A little bit later on, we're going to open up all the phone lines for you from all over the planet. so people can ask Catherine Albrecht questions about privacy issues, about the internet, and about natural treatments. We'll be back.